Good morning. Today is Friday, the 15th of October. Joining us this morning is Arcata City Manager Karen Diemer. Good morning.
Good morning. Happy Friday.
Boy, you don't sound like you're in the fog over there. Congratulations. Are you you drove to work with your window open?
It is always sunny in Arcata. Don't we talk about that every month?
No, no. That's Fortuna. That's Merritt's line, not yours. All right, smart girl. You ready for your question?
No, never. Yes, go for it.
Really? Who was on yesterday? Oh, Stacey Eads got it right. We've had two of them this week. Be correct.
All right, pressure. So, pressure's on.
That's right. Now, I've got one that's semi-financially related.
Okay.
And one that is animal related.
Oh. I guess we'll go animal.
Remember, you asked for it. Okay. Why don't we see more bodies of small animals, such as birds and squirrels, that have died of old age or illness?
Why don't we see more bodies? I think that they quickly go into the food chain.
No.
No.
When an animal feels bad because it's ill or near death, it doesn't carry on with its normal routine while waiting to die on the spot. Instead, it goes somewhere to hide, such as a nest, a hole in the tree, or a clump in the undergrowth, to protect itself from predators during its weakened condition. Should the animal die, it dies there rather than out in the open, and that's why you don't see dead bodies lying all around.
There you go.
See? Wrong.
I'm sorry to break your trend.
Yeah,
badly.
It's not mine, it's others, so that's all right. Oh, you know, we're hearing and have seen the figures that Humboldt State is spending in the market, or has been funded to spend in the market.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you seeing those dollars being applied so far?
Our first big projects, I think, will be around housing, both on campus and off campus. We're all assuming that if plans go correctly, that the first project that they will tee up will be what is a property in Arcata called the Craftsman's Mall.
Right.
It was property that we've talked about developing into student purpose-built housing for several years. And the original private development, I think we've talked about it on this show before, the private development housing just ultimately did not get off the ground. It was very hard to approve. It went through a lot of modifications. And then we continued to see a decline in enrollment. And from a private equity stance, it didn't make sense at the time. So that property has sold to the university. And I think that'll be their first big infusion of housing money in Arcata.
Because it is state-owned property now, do they have to go through the same permitting processes and reports and research and all the rigmarole that a private developer would have to go through? Or does some of that get either fast-tracked or just ignored because it's the state kind of overseeing the state?
Yeah, I'm going to give you a great bureaucratic answer. The answer is yes and no, right? So the answer is yes. They go through a tremendous amount of rigmarole, but it's at a statewide level. The state architect approves their designs. It's state approval of the environmental documents associated with the project. So the no side of that is that they don't go through the local permitting process that, say, a private developer would. So we'll see how it goes through that process. We'll see. We're assuming that that property will be held in state hands. We haven't seen that yet, but that's our assumption, and that they'll go through that state architect and their state review process for that.
Now, is that through the Department of Education or just through the regular state? Because we've heard horror stories over the years about if there's a new school or like the gymnasium that Eureka High is going through, that it just things get stalled out in Alameda. Because overworked, underpaid, underappreciated, that whole routine.
Sure. I'm not sure if the UC and CSU system has its own sort of branch under the state architect, but I assume ultimately the umbrella is the same.
No, okay. So you're not looking at groundbreaking in the next year and a half then?
Ooh, I guess I'd make a prediction in a year and a half we're groundbreaking. A year, probably not.
Okay. Are there other housing developments that are starting to percolate in anticipation of either the campus expansion, some of that, the builders that are going to have to show up to do these contracts, or just the normal pressures on housing that we've been experiencing for the last two and a half years?
We're seeing a few kind of, you know, I'll say kind of small, mid-sized ones. One kind of that's been in the works for a while, off of kind of behind the tennis court, so still within walking distance from the university. There's some vacant property along the highway there. Second is we just saw just kind of some draft renderings of just additional density at an already a multifamily complex area off of Alliance. We are, you know, seeing some movement on the Foster Avenue annexation property that'll be more single-family homes and with accessory dwelling units. And then we're still hoping for, you know, senior-supported living or an assisted living facility on that property. And then we're in the process of going through what I'm going to just in short call like our infill plan for properties that are west of Alliance and kind of north of Samoa, so kind of the southwestern portion of Arcata. And it seems kind of often this nowhere's land, but it is actually within really easy walking distance to downtown, not unreasonable walking distance from the campus, and there is a lot of underutilized property.
Is that
or
like
even vacant property?
The Windsong area, or are you thinking more in the light industrial areas and kind of having it blend in?
Yeah, even south of Windsong, right? I mean, that's, you know, probably 11th isn't quite the break for us, but a lot of it being between, say, 4th and 11th, and then on the very western side of town. So, yeah, a lot of that industrial, if you walk through it, you can see where there's a lot of underdeveloped, there's something on that property, or there's a lot of one-story, like, storage units, or you might see one small unit on a really large site. So there's just a lot of potential for higher density in that area. The Creamery District, you know, the Creamery building is probably 4 to 5 stories tall in places, right? So there's already height within that neighborhood. And the council did a walking tour a few weeks ago and really started to look at, you know, what would height and density look like in this region. And they'll likely have a follow-up meeting in the next month to have a, you know, real discussion about what should we try to plan for, right? Because if the council says nothing more than 4 stories, right, that's one number that we could get in terms of, say, housing units versus if they said 5 stories or 6 stories.
Well, and the arguments would be a lot less also. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:09.
Join Warren Eckstein on KINS in the 6 o'clock hour as he explains pet behaviors, different fun facts, tips, and all sorts of info about your animals and the way they think and act.
Here are just some of the things that kids learn when they have pets in their life.
If you're an animal lover, this is absolutely the program you need to hear.
You know, vocalizations are a very important part of animal communication and their language. Hi, this is Warren Eckstein. Hear my daily pet tip weekdays on KINS FM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Arcata City Manager Karen Diemer. Karen, housing is one thing that is, I guess it's a factor in infrastructure, but streets are also. And as we look at most of the communities in our area, whether it's sunny Fortuna or sunny Arcata, or all the sunny places in between, we really do not have a good concept of how to move people from point A to point B with the existing roads. So as these new housing developments come up, and I know you've got the EIRs and EISs, and let's see what the impacts are and blah, blah, blah. But, okay, so you got another 50 cars being dumped down. You don't see two-lane roads becoming three-lane roads to handle it.
No.
Yeah, there's like an in lieu of fee, and that goes to somewhere, who knows where. And it doesn't
have... Or not even a fee anymore.
Okay, yeah, you know, yeah,
I mean,
to encourage...
a lot of the state regulations are going to eliminate any ability to extract additional street fees from development.
You know that word is almost like a flash word, right?
Extract?
Yeah. Just an FYI for your marketing team to consider. So how... In light of that and obviously the demand for additional housing and more activity going on, how do you plan for that element of it? Because I don't think all of a sudden people are going to be jumping on the buses. It's going to be bikes. It's going to be cars. It's going to be trucks. It's going to be all the things that are necessary for those residents, but also all of those that are then in the businesses that are going to be created to serve this increased
right.
population as well. So you got the delivery right. trucks and the UPS guys and gals and the FedExes. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be riding bikes.
No. But I mean, I'll say twofold. I'll say one, you know, where the state funding is, where the federal funding is, and is in these smaller or non-motorized, you know, operations. So we are looking at bike lanes. We are looking at increased transit. For example, the new housing development, four stories going in downtown right now, those units come for at least the first 3 years with a free bus pass. We received, because that's low-income housing, we got additional state funds that will add bike lanes, that will increase sidewalks, that will improve crosswalks. So a big piece of it is recognizing if you densify and if you have housing and retail and entertainment and access to the university within walking and biking distance, that people don't need their cars, at least not every day. So you're maybe not looking at as convenient, either as much parking or as convenient parking as we require right now. I don't think it's going to be overnight that people are, you know, just mass go on to transit, but I think ultimately that's the direction we will be pushed into as a region, as it grows, right? We're not going to have a lot of money for new roads. They're not going to get wider.
And that makes sense. But let's say, I think it would be logical to think that there's going to be more activities on campus that are going to draw people from McKinleyville and Eureka and maybe even Sunny Fortuna to come to town. Well, if the surface parking lots are now being sucked up and reutilized as these housing developments.
Yeah. I think the university would love to build where they have parking, but at this point, the university studies show that they are very, very tight in parking. So
right.
while I say we're not going to see a lot of new road infrastructure, we are looking at options to increase some parking right around the university.
Multi-level?
And we're looking at where could we – I haven't seen any multi-level designs yet.
Okay.
But, you know, but properties that could be – you know, could potentially create multi-level over time – but then the other option is to really look at park and ride facilities that are just outside of town that have really good shuttles that just come in and you don't have to worry about getting into, you know, the traffic before you find parking.
So do cities typically pay for that, the shuttling going on, or would that be, in our case, the HTA having to increase their budget and being subsidized to run shuttles from that kind of a scenario?
We've seen a lot of different models. Sometimes, you know, education facilities or events contribute to paying for it. Sometimes there is state funding. We just applied again to have free buses for the whole summer. There's a lot of state funding to try to make buses free everywhere, right? If that's the direction we're going, that ultimately, you know, it could be that our gas tax or how we ultimately have road taxes associated with electric vehicles have to fund free bus and free transit in some of our communities. So that model is going to change over the next 15 years, 20 years, I think, where transit becomes even more affordable than it is today.
Certainly.
From a user perspective, not
right.
necessarily from an operation perspective.
Right, yeah. Well, and,
you know, but we'll see. We're converting to electric buses. We have two electric buses in the budget for this year in Arcata.
How much is that?
How much are they?
Yeah.
Oh, I think they're running about $450,000 a piece.
So throwing sales tax, you're about at $1 million bucks.
Yeah, no sales tax.
It's all
grant funded.
Yeah.
And in part, you know, we talked about affordable housing. I'd say half of one of those buses is being funded through a grant as a result of building those 44 units of affordable housing that you see going up right now near the co-op. It's all state funded.
The model with gas tax, though, is going to have to be changed because, you know, as there's more and more push away from gas, mandated and regulated, that isn't going to be there.
That is absolutely correct.
But you know what? Yeah. That's not your battle, huh?
Well, it will be how we implement locally, right?
True.
I mean, yeah, the state has been studying this for years. They've even had pilot studies where, you know, they've had randomly people throughout the whole state with little computers in their car that are starting to feed in data. You know, how many trips, how far are there, what's the frequency, what's the time of day, you know, just to try to get a really good sense of how would you ever tax.
And isn't that frightening, you know, the whole Big Brother syndrome on that one.
It's
8:30.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now.
Live. Real Red Meat Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Sunny-to-be Arcata City Manager Karen Diemer. I'm looking at the Freshwater Valley, and it's socked in, so I know it all starts in Arcata.
It's working its way to you.
There you
You'll
go.
You'll have sun soon, I promise.
Fair enough. Hey, with some of these protests and the defunding stuff that has been going on throughout the West Coast and the East Coast, has the City Council taken a formal position one way or the other, either to allow Chief Bryan to either fund, expand, replace, add services, or on the flip side, cut back, not hire, not do? Has that played out at all in Arcata?
There's been discussions about expanding services for what I'll call non-sworn personnel, right? So we had a grant during COVID, but then let's get back to our sworn policing patrol numbers. But we had a grant during COVID to hire two what are called MIST, if you've heard locally. They're Department of Health and Human Services County mental health employees, and they're working side by side in our police department. So the county had funding for us to have like one MIST worker for 4 hours, hopefully 3 weeks a month, right? So this grant brought on two. We have 4 day a week coverage right now from mental health clinicians on staff that are going out doing independent street outreach, or going on calls that come in that have a mental health component in Arcata. So our stimulus funds that came to Arcata, one of the priority areas for the city was we can spend those up to 2025. So was when our grant runs out in 2022, was to use those stimulus funds to at least fund that out for an additional 3 years. So that's kind of the growth that we're seeing in the police department. The reductions that we're seeing on the patrol side are twofold. One is we did reduce positions last year during COVID throughout the whole city, right? We reduced 10 positions. Two of those were sworn officers. So those positions are still not funded in this budget year, but the truth, and the council's had really public conversations about this, we are now 4 staff short below even being able to hire those two positions that to pretend to fund those this year would really be disingenuous because the chances of us filling them are zero, right? Like we have one officer in the academy right now, right, that will be coming on hopefully to us by January. And then we have a couple that we're starting background with. Hopefully we could get into an academy in the spring of 2022. But I don't know, you know, if you've read, there was, you know, some in-depth recent articles about the challenges around recruiting and retention of police officers. It's a really challenging time to be in law enforcement. And while we think that Arcata offers law enforcement, you know, sort of a unique experience of the university town, yes, sadly and honestly, we do have crime, but we also have a lot of opportunities for really positive community engagement for our police officers, and we think it's a great place to work. We are also struggling with recruitment. So it makes that conversation there's no push for that conversation right now because we don't have extra money to spend. But I think what our council has said is they really want to see both. They want to see us be able to hire good, compassionate law enforcement officers and at the same time be able to expand so that we're not relying on law enforcement officers for a lot of the mental health, behavioral health, family crisis intervention that our officers end up being the only people that will respond to the calls, right? So trying to expand those services.
So how realistic is it to get more of the mental health folks if the county isn't able to find these folks? How would the city, because I would presume that the county would have more support, would have more funding, would have more resources for higher compensation, and their demand, their need is so much larger just in sheer volume than what Arcata is. Are you going to try to out-niche them? Why would somebody come to Arcata
not at all, no.
Instead of the county?
We're not going to try to do that anymore. We are hiring, like, our MIST employees, they work for the county technically, right? So we are pulling from their pool. And the biggest advantage is that, therefore, those employees are completely tied into all the county programs, the county computer system, the county data on the, you know, each individual person that they're working with has a history often that is captured in that county system that we typically would not have access to. So they could see what type of treatments in the past worked, what didn't work, where have they been housed, when were there periods where they weren't housed, right? So that's the advantage of us actually bringing on county employees that work in the city of Arcata. Yeah, it's absolutely going to be a challenge. We need really great individuals that are interested in going into street mental health work. It's critical for us to see a change to the conditions that we're seeing on our street.
So are these individuals then, Karen, specifically assigned to Arcata and they are yours? You know, once it gets to a full time, that's it, and they're untouchable by anybody else? So that they get...
Well, no. I mean, they still technically work for the county.
Yeah, well,
what they typically do is about 30 hours for us, 35 hours for us, and then they still attend county meetings. They still report in.
Sure.
They're still staying connected, right? But that's the value piece. We're really trying not to work in silos between the county and between the cities around street mental health outreach. That's not working in our community. So hopefully this model, like what we do is say, we're going to bring the funding. County, you can guarantee that we are going to have money for two or three of these positions or 40 hours a week of coverage or 80 hours a week of coverage. And then it is a challenge, but they work really hard to find staff to fill those slots that they know have funding.
So there's a commitment there once you get them that this is their job. Working with you guys.
Absolutely. And they have an office in the police department. And as I said, they'll go out on calls, but they'll also check in and tell our staff, hey, these are the four areas that I'm going to go out and talk to people to today. You know, I met with some people out here yesterday. I'm going to go check. I think a couple of them might be ready for services. Or I found a housing unit. I've got a priority list. I'm going to go out and look for those individuals and see if I can't convince them today to come into that housing. So our MIST employees have actually housed, you know, probably half a dozen individuals in the last year through that street outreach. It takes time. It's, you know, it's not quick work, but I think it is rewarding and starting to see, you know, you see the small, huge differences in an individual life. It might look small from the landscape of the street.
You bust your chops for a year and a half, and then somebody comes across, and then here comes another vehicle, and it's got four inside.
Right.
You know, so you get the frustration. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
Hey, folks. Flying local is buying local. And with three airlines serving five destinations, Humboldt County has more choices than ever. Fly on American, Avelo, or United Airlines. We have service to Denver, Hollywood Burbank, LAX, Phoenix, and San Francisco airports. Now's the time to book and save on that getaway. Or have friends and family fly to visit the beautiful Redwood Coast. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org. Fly Humboldt, more flights to more destinations.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time is 8:48. We're bouncing back and forth this morning with Karen Diemer from the city of Arcata. Looks like the fiber optics are getting closer and closer and closer to the first terminus. Is that?
I think we had the first cable land a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And certainly if you drive out 255, you see that they've made
You mean
way
Samoa Boulevard?
Yeah, Samoa Boulevard.
Don't go state on us, gee.
You know, that fiber has been making its way to Arcata, and it's exciting.
Yeah, when it gets to, and again, I'm using old guy references, the Copeland site.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a major point of demarcation. At that point, do things start happening, or is that just, okay, that's one point, and then we're going to connect from there and go to the next one, and then after everything is all connected and dialed in, that's when the magic starts?
I think, of course, you know I'm going to say, Brian, the magic starts in Arcata.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, yeah. Yeah, maybe that's a new positioner, huh? Not sunny, but magical. Yes.
Right. Sunny and magical in Arcata this weekend. You know, it is their data, their server, their connection point is that hub, right? So a lot of that signaling and switching and storage will all be happening from that hub. But yes, it also has to be a connector point, you know. And in the next phase, as I understand it, will be to continue kind of out around Old Arcata Road and tying back into Eureka that way.
Oh, so we'll continue to see the guys with the, the undergrounding gear along the shoulder along Old Arcata.
Yeah, and then, of course, the idea is that it hooks into the redundant, what's going to come across 299, right? And so we have what we call digital redundancy here.
So is that coming across now? Are they working their way east to west? Do the fires and some of that stuff hold that up?
Yeah, I have not heard if they have started actually laying cable on that line.
Okay.
But the governor did sign a piece of legislation as he finished out the legislative session this week. Around what he calls the last mile. So I haven't had a chance to research it. We should talk about it maybe next month around, you know, potentially money accessible to local governments to try to fund additional broadband in our communities, what they call that last mile. So right within your communities for these big transmission lines that are going to be coming past us.
So it's like a tap in into the stream, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I would think that would be... Now, is that something that's negotiated by the local jurisdictions?
We're all learning. Like, this is the new frontier. You know, for example, when this cable has made its way to Arcata and they are doing their vertical drilling, like underground drilling, right, to come to that data center, the city has purchased in our agreement with them what they call dark fiber. So they're not being utilized and we're not paying for them yet, but we have reserved that capacity. That, you know, let's say, you know, the city ended up like right now, we're trying to connect our city hall to our corporation yard. So
right.
While we have these companies that are doing this drilling, we're getting a really good cost deal because they're here with the equipment to do that underground drill from Arcata, from city hall to the corp yard. And that same line, if we can ultimately connect to this other dark fiber and, you know, then at some point light up and rent that space to connect our neighborhoods. You know, if we had, let's say, HSU Polytech was expanding and had a facility in the Creamery District and needed to connect back to the university, ultimately the city would like to have an underground fiber network that could be utilized for government educational purposes.
Or
so
for whatever purposes, I would think. Couldn't you use it for private capital purposes, too?
We could. We're looking at what the regulation is going to be around that. I mean, I think there is a push for community broadband.
Yeah.
And we'll see who takes that piece on.
Fun stuff.
Yeah.
All righty. Well, don't forget your suntan lotion.
I won't.
Arcata has made it over to Eureka. I can officially say that. I'm seeing sun over freshwater.
I asked if they could speed that up while we were on this call.
What a gal. Enjoy your weekend, Karen.
You too.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
See everybody on Monday.